Chapter 7. That in God there is active power. It follows from this that God is powerful, and that active power is fittingly ascribed to Him. For active power is the principle of acting on another as such. It becomes God to be the principle of being to other things, therefore it becomes Him to be powerful. Moreover, just as passive potentiality is consequent upon being in potentiality, so active potency is consequent upon being in act, for a thing is active because it is in act, and passive because it is in potentiality. Now it becomes God to be in act. Therefore active power is becoming to Him. Again, the divine perfection includes the perfection of all things, as was proved in the first book. Now active power belongs to the perfection of a thing, since a thing is found to be the more perfect in proportion as it is more powerful. Therefore God cannot be devoid of active power. Further, whatever acts, has the power to act, since that which has not the power to act, cannot possibly act, and what cannot possibly act, of necessity does not act. Now God acts and moves, as was proved above. Therefore He has the power to act, and active but not passive potency is fittingly ascribed to Him. Hence it is said in the psalm, "Thou art mighty potence, O Lord," and elsewhere, "Thy power and Thy justice, O God, even to the highest great things Thou hast done." Chapter 8. That God's power is highest substance. We may also conclude from this that the divine power is God's very substance. For active power becomes a thing according as this is in act. God is very act, nor is He being in act by some act that is not Himself, since in Him there is no potentiality, as we have proved in the first book. Therefore He is His own power. Again, whatever is powerful and is not its own power, is powerful by participating another's power. But nothing can be ascribed to God by participation, for He is His own being, as we proved in the first book. Therefore He is His own power. Moreover, active power belongs to a thing's perfection, as stated above. Now every perfection of God is contained in His very being, as was shown in the first book. Therefore the divine power is not other than His very being. Now God is His own being, as we proved in the first book. Therefore He is His own power. Again, in those things whose powers are not their substance, their powers are accidents. Hence natural power is placed in the second species of accident. But in God there can be no accident, as was proved in the first book. Therefore God is His own power. Further, whatever is by another is reduced to that which is by its very self, being thus reduced to that which is first. Now other agents are reduced to God as first agent. Therefore He is agent by His very self. But that which acts by its very self, acts by its essence, and that by which a thing acts is its active power. Therefore God's very essence is His active power. Chapter 9. That God's power is highest action. From this we can show that God's power is not other than His action, for things that are identical with one and the same thing, are identical with one another. Now God's power is His substance, as we have proved, and His action is also His substance, as we showed in the first book, with regard to His intellectual operation, for this applies equally to His other operations. Therefore in God power is not distinct from action. Again, the action of a thing is a complement of its power, for it is compared to power as a second act to first. Now the divine power is not completed by another than Himself, since it is God's very essence. Therefore in God power is not distinct from action. Moreover, just as active power is something acting, so is its essence something being. Now God's power is His essence, as we have proved. Therefore His action is His being, but His being is His substance. Therefore God's action is His substance, and so the same conclusion follows as before. Further, an action that is not the substance of the agent, is in the agent as an accident in its subject, wherefore action is reckoned among the nine predicaments of accident. Now there can be nothing accidental in God. God's substance is not other than His power. Chapter 10. In what way power is ascribed to God? Since, however, nothing is its own principle, and God's action is not other than His power, it is clear from the foregoing that power is ascribed to God, not as the principle of action, but as the principle of a thing made. And since power implies relation to something else under the aspect of principle thereof, For active power is the principle of acting on something else. According to the philosopher, it is evident that power is ascribed to God in relation to things made, according to reality, and not in relation to action, except according to our way of understanding. For as much as our intellect considers both the divine power and action, to wit, by different concepts. Wherefore, if certain actions are becoming to God, which do not pass into something made but remain in the agent, power is not ascribed to God in their respect, except according to our manner of understanding, and not according to reality. Such actions are intelligence and volition. Accordingly, God's power, properly speaking, does not regard such like actions, but only their effects. Consequently, intellect and will are in God, not as powers, but only as actions. It is also clear from the foregoing that the manifold actions ascribed to God, as intelligence, volition, the production of things, and the like, are not so many different things, since each of these actions in God is his own very being, which is one and the same thing. How one thing may remain true while having many significations, may be clearly seen from what has been shown in the first book. 11. Chapter 11. That something is said of God in relation to creatures. Now, as power is becoming to God in relation to his effects, and as power conveys the notion of a principle, as we have stated, and since principle denotes relationship to that which proceeds from it, it is evident that something can be said of God relatively, in relation to his effects. Again, it is inconceivable that one thing be referred to another, unless conversely the latter be referred to it. Now we speak of other things in relation to God, for example as regards their being which they have from God, as already proved, they are dependent upon him. Therefore conversely we may speak of God in relation to creatures. Further, likeness is a kind of relation. Now God, even as other agents, produces something like himself. Therefore something is said of him relatively. Moreover, knowledge denotes relation to the thing known. Now God has knowledge not only of himself, but also of other things. Something is said of God in relation to other things. Again, mover implies relation to thing moved, and agent to thing done. Now God is an agent, and an unmoved mover, as already proved. Relations are predicated of him. Again, first implies some kind of relation, and so does supreme. Now it was proved in the first book, that he is the first being and the supreme good. It is therefore evident that many things are said of God relatively. Chapter 12. That relations said of God in reference to creatures are not really in God. These relations, however, which refer to his effects cannot possibly be in God, for they cannot be in him as accidents in a subject, since no accident is in him, as we proved in the first book. Neither can they be God's very substance because, since relative terms are those which essentially refer somehow to something else, as the philosopher says, it would follow that God's substance is essentially referred to something else. Now that which is essentially referred to another, depends in some way thereon, since it can neither exist nor be understood without it. Hence it would follow that God's substance is dependent on something else outside it, and thus it would not be of itself necessary being, as we have proved in the first book. Such like relations are not really in God. Again, it was proved in the first book, that God is the first measure of all beings. Therefore God is compared to other beings as knowable things to our knowledge, since opinion or speech is true or false according as a thing is or is not. According to the philosopher, now though a thing is said to be knowable in relation to knowledge, the relation is not really in the knowable, but only in the knowledge. Wherefore according to the philosopher, the knowable is so called relatively, not because it is itself related, but because something else is related to it. Therefore the said relations are not really in God. Further, the aforesaid relations are said of God not only with respect to those things that are actual, but also with respect to those that are in potentiality, because he both has knowledge of them, and in reference to them is called the first being and the sovereign good. But that which is actual has no real relation to that which is not actual but potential, else it would follow that there are actually an infinite number of relations in the same subject, since potentially infinite numbers are greater than the number to which is prior to them all. Now God is not related to actual things otherwise than to potential things, for he is not changed by the fact that he produces certain things. Therefore he is not related to other things by a relation really existing in him. Moreover, whatever receives something anew, must needs be changed, either essentially or accidentally. Now certain relations are said of God anew, for instance that he is lord or governor of a thing which begins anew to exist. Wherefore if a relation were predicated of God as really existing in him, it would follow that something accrues to God anew, and consequently that he is changed either essentially or accidentally, the contrary of which was proved in the first book. 13 and 14. Chapters 13 and 14. How the aforesaid relations are predicated of God. Nevertheless it cannot be said that the aforesaid relations exist extraneously as something outside God. For since God is the first being and sovereign good, it would be necessary to consider yet other relations of God to those relations that are realities. And if these also are realities, we shall again have to find third relations and so on indefinitely. Therefore the relations by which God is referred to other things are not really existing outside God. Again, a thing is predicated denominatively in two ways, for a thing may be denominated from that which is outside it, for instance from place a person is said to be somewhere, and from time someone, and a thing may be denominated from that which is in it, as a person is denominated white from whiteness. On the other hand a thing is not found to be denominated from a relation as extraneous, but as inherent, for a man is not denominated a father except from fatherhood which is in him. Therefore it is impossible for the relations whereby God is referred to creatures to be realities outside him. Since then it has been proved that they are not really in him, and yet are predicated of him, it remains that they are ascribed to him according only to our way of understanding, from the fact that other things are referred to him. For our intellect, in understanding one thing to be referred to another, understands at the same time that the latter is related to the former, although sometimes it is not really related at all. Wherefore it is also evident that the aforesaid relations are not said of God in the same way as other things predicated of God. For all other things, as wisdom, will, predicate his essence, whereas the aforesaid relations do not by any means, but solely according to our way of understanding. And yet our understanding is not false, because from the very fact that our intellect understands that the relations of the divine effects terminate in God himself, it predicates certain things of him relatively. Even so we understand and express the knowable relatively from the fact that our knowledge is referred to it. It is also clear from the foregoing that it is not prejudicial to God's simplicity if many relations are predicated of him, although they do not signify his essence, because they are consequent upon our way of understanding. For nothing hinders our intellect understanding many things, and being referred in many ways to that which is in itself simple, so as thus to consider the simple thing under a manifold relationship. And the more simple a thing is, the greater its virtue, and of so many more things is it a principle, and consequently, it is understood as related in so many more ways. Thus a point is a principle of more things than a line is, and a line of more things than a surface. Wherefore the very fact that many things are said of God relatively, bears witness to his supreme simplicity. Chapter 15. That God is to all things the cause of being. Now, since we have proved that God is the source of being to some things, we must further show that everything besides himself is from him. For whatever belongs to a thing otherwise than as such, belongs to it through some cause, as white to a man, because that which has no cause is something first and immediate, wherefore it must needs belong to the thing essentially and as such. Now it is impossible for any one thing to belong to two and to both of them as such. For that which is said of a thing as such, does not go beyond that thing. For instance, to have three angles equal to two right angles does not go beyond a triangle. Accordingly if something belongs to two things, it will not belong to both as such. Wherefore it is impossible for any one thing to be predicated of two so as to be said of neither by reason of a cause, but it is necessary that either the one be the cause of the other. For instance, fire is the cause of heat in a mixed body, and yet each is called hot, or else some third thing must be cause of both. For instance, fire is the cause of two candles giving light. Now being is said of everything that is. Wherefore it is impossible that there be two things neither of which has a cause of its being, but either both the things in question must have their being through a cause, or else the one must be the cause of being to the other. Hence everything that, in any way whatever, is, must needs be from that to which nothing is a cause of being. Now we have proved above, that God is this being to which nothing is a cause of its being. Therefore from him is everything that, in any way whatever, is. If however it be said that being is not a univocal predicate, the above conclusion follows nonetheless. For it is not said of many equivocally, but analogically, and thus it is necessary to be brought back to one thing. Moreover, that which belongs to a thing by its nature, and not by some other cause, cannot be diminished and deficient therein. For if something essential be subtracted from or added to a nature, there will be at once another nature, even as it happens in numbers, where the addition or subtraction of unity changes the species. And if the nature or quiddity of a thing remain entire, although something is found to be diminished, it is clear that this does not depend simply on that nature, but on something else, through the absence of which it is diminished. Wherefore that which belongs to one thing less than to others, belongs to it not through its nature alone, but through some other cause. Consequently that thing will be the cause of all in a certain genus, to which thing the predication of that genus belongs above all. Hence that which is most hot is seen to be the cause of heat in all things hot, and that which is most light is the cause of all things that have light. Now God is being above all, as we have proved in the first book. Therefore he is the cause of all of which being is predicated. Further, the order of causes must needs correspond to the order of effects, since effects are proportionate to their causes. Wherefore, as proper effects are reduced to their proper causes, so that which is common in proper effects must needs be reduced to some common cause. Even so, above the particular causes of the generation of this or that thing, is the sun the universal cause of generation, and the king is the universal cause of government in his kingdom, above the wardens of the kingdom and of each city. Now being is common to all. Therefore above all causes there must be a cause to which it belongs to give being. But God is the first cause, as shown above. Therefore it follows that all things that are from God. Again, that which is said to be essentially so and so is the cause of all that are so by participation. Thus fire is the cause of all things ignited as such. Now God is being by his essence, because he is being itself, whereas everything else is being by participation, for there can be but one being that is its own being, as was proved in the first book. Therefore God is the cause of being to all other things. Further, everything that is possible to be and not to be has a cause, because considered in itself it is indifferent to either, so that there must needs be something else that determines it to one. Wherefore, since we cannot proceed to infinity, there must needs be some necessary thing that is the cause of all things that it is possible to be and not to be. Now there is a necessary thing that has a cause of its necessity, and here again we cannot proceed to infinity, so that we must come to something that is of itself necessary to be. And this can be but one, as we showed in the first book, and this is God. Therefore everything other than him must be reduced to him as the cause of its being. Moreover, God is the maker of a thing, inasmuch as he is in act, as we have proved above. Now by his actuality and perfection he contains all the perfections of things, as we have shown in the first book, and thus he is virtually all things. Therefore he is the maker of all. But this would not be if something else were of a nature to be otherwise than from him, for nothing is of a nature to be from another, and not to be from another, since if it be of a nature not to be from another, it is of itself necessary to be, and thus can never be from another. Therefore nothing can be except from God. Again, the imperfect originate from the perfect, as seed from an animal. Now God is the most perfect being and the sovereign good, as was shown in the first book. Therefore he is to all things the cause of being, especially since it was proved that there can be but one such thing. This is confirmed by divine authority, for it is said in the psalm, "Who made heaven and earth, the sea, and all the things that are in them, and all things were made by him, and without him was made nothing, and of him, and by him, and in him are all things, to him be glory forever." This sets aside the error of the ancient physicists who asserted that certain bodies had no cause of their being, likewise of some who say that God is not the cause of the substance of heaven, but only of its movement.